When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
That's a really hard sentence to say fast.
It is. I'm
Dungeons
glad you're the one doing it.
Demogorgons.
I would have to rename the show if it was me announcing it.
I'm trying my best here. So what do you think of episode 7 of season 3, The Bite?
I thought it's really good. One of the things I appreciate about Stranger Things, if you know, like sometimes I think they stretch my credibility here or there, but the thing that makes it work is they pay really close attention to how the plot broadly fits together. Like, you know, when Elle comes in to save the day with the Chrysler Baron she threw at the Russians, like,
the car is,
a lot of shows would just have that happen, but they set it up with Dustin making the weak battery phone call, so they didn't know exactly where they were, but they heard Maul in movies. Hopper is able to pick up a Russian radio, and they happen to have a Russian translator that they established like at the midpoint of the fucking season. So this all feels natural that now the adults know where the kids are and they can find it. So like when all this stuff comes back together seamlessly at the end, it doesn't feel like, oh, a bunch of bullshit, how cheap. It's rewarding. And that's the extra step that this show takes to keep that suspension of disbelief up that other shows that we've covered sometimes don't, to their detriment. So I think there's a lot of humor. There's actually a lot of heart. Like, I was actually surprised at how caught up I got up in Alexei dying. You know, like, he's always been kind of this pure goofy dude that likes watching Looney Tunes and likes watching, you know, Woody Woodpecker, and
sort of enamored with like American culture.
Yeah. Or becoming
weirdnesses.
Yeah. Becoming enamored. And then, you know, he goes to like this, you know, a Midwestern fair, which is a very fun place. And he wins his Woody Woodpecker doll and he's cheered by children. And then he gets shot in the chest and it reminded me a little bit, not nearly as powerful an impact, but like Bob, you know, where they build up this guy who's just a good guy. He's a Russian scientist on U.S. soil trying to open up a portal to some unknown dimension full of monsters. Definition of good guy. But the stuff like that, I think the show does really well, and I enjoy it. What'd you think?
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. I really enjoyed this episode. There are a lot of heartfelt moments, like, you know, the stuff with Alexei, the stuff with Robin and Steve, I thought was pretty well done. There are a lot of really funny moments. Like, I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed that the human matchmaker that is Murray, just laying out the case, laying it all out for Hopper and Joyce, saying, look, you guys, just either let's get this thing done, or it's pull over and strip and get it on, because this is getting in the way of everything. Murray's just endlessly entertaining for me.
Yeah, and that's where you see a lot of the romancing the stone influences coming. These people who want to fuck each other, but they also hate each other. Or that tension is causing them to hate each other and have friction. And him being able to jump in, just like he did with Nancy and Jonathan last season, and cut right to the chase and give a devastating critique. Like, I really like the... You know, oh, yeah, he's a big brute, and he's dumb, and he probably reminds you of a bunch of bad relationships, but you're curious about how he is in a sack, and then he turns his venom towards Hopper. This guy is so good at this type of character. I've seen him play it, like, three different times. I know he was in that Love series that stars... is it Gillian Jacobs or Jillian Jacobs?
I think it's Jillian, but I haven't seen the show.
He plays her like a pod, I think, boss of a podcast thing. But he's very good at this kind of acerbic wit, and like when you give him a script that just allows him to unwind and uncork like this, it's great.
What was the Phoebe Waller-Bridge thing he was recently in?
Yes, Fleabag.
Fleabag. Yeah.
He was also that type of character in Fleabag, and he's really good at it. He's really good at it. I even kind of came around on the Dime Store Terminator.
Okay.
It's like you know, I talked about my critique of him as the Monopoly, the Dan Harmon's Monopoly Man theory. And it's like, this is like if Ace Ventura at the end of the movie had the Monopoly guy come and foreclose on Ace Ventura's hotels. You know, it's like if okay. you bring that thing all the way around, you kind of got to respect it. And here, like when Hopper got him and just like right through the chest and the guy goes down, mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck yeah. Then he gets up just like the Terminator does. Of course, it's bulletproof vest and stuff. But that kind of stuff, kind of like, okay, fine. If you're going to commit to the gag that much, then it comes they won me back around from being kind of derisive to like, okay, you actually committed to it.
Yeah. And the other thing I love about Murray is they're sort of giving him this budding friendship with the evil Russian scientist, which is the most unlikely of friendships. It's kind of like an odd couple sort of thing. But it's developed over the course of really just like three episodes, but it feels so natural. Looking at him in season two, you would say he will never be friends with a Russian, evil Russian scientist, right?
Right.
And then here we are. So and it felt organic the way they got to it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I really like that stuff.
Speaking of Murray, they released his phone number last episode. Like, uh-huh. Hopper reads it out. And unlike many Hollywood phone numbers, that's a real phone number, 618-625-8313. You can actually call that. It's an Illinois phone number. It's a nice touch.
Okay, yeah.
It's Murray's answer machine. So mm-hmm. if you got some time today, give it a call. It's pretty funny.
Speaking of Illinois and Murray, yeah. They're really far away uh-huh. at the moment, or they were really far away when this whole when the shit went down. Uh-huh. I guess did it feel to you like maybe they were playing with time a little bit here, like as far as how long? I don't know where in Illinois they are, if they're like right on the border, but either way, it takes a long damn time to drive north. Or I guess you could drive west a little bit. It felt like they were super far away and they got back really fast.
So they established the Duffers sometime in the offseason. I can't remember where I saw that, but they established that Hawkins was in central Indiana. Uh-huh. So, and I just assumed that, I don't know why I assumed this, but I assumed that the Murray is over the border just west. So
just
like
you right can, over the border.
Yeah,
like
you can get there in like two hours ish. And if you're a cop and you got a pedal to the metal on a convertible, maybe get there faster. I think they also left when it's still daylight and they're arriving. That I mean,
all right, maybe it just felt quick because it was a matter of like a scene, and they were there. But
Another big theme I want to talk about, because this is something we were wondering, like what is the deal with the Flayed? Or like if once mm-hmm. they merge into Turner Pilot, are they gone? It's notable the Billy is as yet unmerged.
Yeah, and I don't think he ever did merge, right?
So
it's not like, oh, he's back reconstructed by the thing.
Right, but like with last episode giving so much background information, are they setting the stage to do like a redemption arc with Billy? Are they going to Steve him?
It's possible. Because anytime you start to dip into a character's backstory and make them sympathetic, mm-hmm. Turning the villain a little more sympathetic, I think... You know, they're at least hinting that there could be that arc.
Mm-hmm. And we've already had, like, I mean, because, like, we haven't had a major death yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, and, you know, Stranger Things hasn't been, like, a big Grim Reaper. It's not Game of Thrones. But, you know, last year we lost Bob. I guess Alexi could be. I'm just wondering, like, what's our temperature here about thinking Billy's going to make it out of the season or not?
I mean, right now it doesn't seem good.
Yeah, he's like a double antagonist. He was like a base jerk, bully, shithead to all the people we care about, and now he's actually being manipulated by a malevolent force.
Yeah.
So he's got that against him. But we also know that at the core, he's a sweet little boy. So.
But it also seems like if their idea here, as explained in the show, is to sort of take down this monster, thereby eliminating it, they would also have to take out Billy, right? Because he's still a host. And this thing could always retreat to Billy. So I would think...
They could, like, put him in a scalding hot bath.
Yeah, maybe drive it out the same way they did with Will.
Yeah, he seems like he's much stronger than Will.
Yeah.
In terms of power. But I guess I could... What do you think the Mind Player is playing at? Why leave this one active? I guess we don't know that there's just one active. We could still get our zombie battle at the mall. But it seems like he's maybe. The only one that's outside of the Mind Flayer collective. What... Yeah. Is that just so he can have a little bit of stealth? Like he's got Billy going around in stealth mode, looking like a human, like tracking L, so he doesn't have to rampage down through, you know. Because, like, the Billy can go up to a person and be like, hey, have you seen some kids in a convertible? And the Mind Flayer can't just roll up and be like, have you seen some kids in a convertible? You know, flapping its six-story high appendages and stuff. So, it kind of makes sense.
Which those appendages are all now, like, half dismembered. So I have huge questions around the Mind Flayer, the physical representation of the Mind Flayer. Uh-huh. Can it be physically hurt?
It doesn't seem like. Well, it can't be physically hurt.
When it's dismembered, do those things just sort of reattach? When its head is ripped in half by L, does it just sort of merge back together?
It seems like each chunk you rip off is ambulate. Like whenever it ripped off one of those tentacle things, like the actual end of it kind of scampered off like a facehugger and presumably went to rejoin the Horde. So like, it definitely can it can be caused like none of these things feel good to it. It doesn't seem like so. It can be hurt, but can it be actually injured or killed through physical means? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
or can it just reassemble itself similar to like a blob or the thing? Or
that's the whole thing I was worried about this season, is that it's all going to come down to L stretching her arms out and screaming, and through the penultimate episode, that is so far been the case. Now, she did get us some assistance at the cabin. Like there were axes and shotguns and whatnot, but fundamentally it's so far been Elle screaming her way to victory.
Oh, and they're absolutely going to pay off in some way. I don't know if it'll be like, oh, this is super effective or super ineffective.
Oh, the fireworks?
These fireworks have to be paid off, right?
Yeah.
Satan's baby does not get introduced without a payoff.
Right. Yeah, it's check off Satan's baby now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's the thing I want to talk about. Is there a little bit of an anachronism that I felt like that you couldn't buy these type of fireworks in Indiana until like 1988? I tried to look up the laws, but like unfortunately, like if you look up firework laws in Indiana, it's all about geared about today and like, oh, and especially since it's just after 4th of July, like all the results are clogged with like, you know, what are the laws currently? I couldn't actually find when the statute changed or anything like that. But I do remember growing up, you could not buy, or you had to do the thing that we do currently in Ohio, where you go to some tent and you swear, like on a Bible, that you're going to buy them and then take them out of state to set them off. Mm-hmm. But no one really. But the thing is you couldn't buy. You can't buy them in like a supermarket. You can't buy like Roman candles and shit in a supermarket. So a little bit of a question about whether that's plausible or not. But I don't know. And it's also, I know it didn't make it past the 80s. So if they advance it a couple years, who cares?
One thing I know is not anachronistic is this carnival, because every single ride, every single booth, every single food stand, all of those are things you see in probably any county fair around the country, but certainly in the county fairs that I was familiar with in our area.
Sure.
Especially like all the way down to this funhouse thing, mm-hmm. which I assume is just like a bunch of trucks sort of transformed into this configuration. Maybe this one was a little fancier than the one that came around our county. Maybe three stories instead of two.
It's definitely very clean and looks. Because I was wondering, like, do they have to even make a change? Like, did they have to, like, oh, the Gravitons in 1985?
We still have those in
2019. Right, and they look exactly the fucking same. The Funhouse mirrors look the same. Like, maybe the prizes that you'd win at a prize booth would look different. But
yeah, you're getting Minions instead of Woody Woodpeckers, right?
Like, that'd be very Minion and poop emoji heavy nowadays.
Right.
But yeah, like I wonder how much of trouble they actually had to go through to bring that to the modern age. Because even the food trucks like look very it's you know, street carnivals are kind of like these kitschy affairs anyway. So them being a throwback is not bad. Like they looked like they were from the 50s when I was a kid. They look like they're kind of from the 50s in 2019. I bet they were just able to polish up. I did. You know, when they were having the Wall of Mirrors battle, I did make the joke about, like, well, this is completely unrealistic. It's at the end of a day, and there's no, like, handprints and, like, nose smears. Because if you go to those, that's what ruins all those things. Like, unless someone came in and cleaned all the fucking glasses in between everyone fucking around, you're like, it spoils the effect, because you can just see people smearing their greasy human skin shit
I mean, they've just eaten an elephant ear and a waffle cone ice cream.
Like I don't know
shit on the mirrors.
I don't know when carnies clean those. Maybe the first day they clean them and give it a nice, or maybe they do it at the end of each day, but like there's no way. Arnold should have known. The dime store Arnold should have known that Hopper wasn't there because he was shooting out a greasy handprint.
Right. Here, so Okay, so Back to the Future. Let's talk Back to the Future because a huge part of this episode.
Finally, we got the Back to the Future.
Yeah, we got a reference. We got the movie, portions of the movie in there. I found it. So I had said earlier, like, if Crispin Glover is not in this movie because he's in Back to the Future, he's right. in this Wilfred thing, which is the Rat King tie-in. A carnival. Having Crispin Glover be a carny is the perfect opportunity.
He could have been a carny barker.
Absolutely be a carny.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it.
What are they thinking?
He's not going to be in the finale. But the other thing I like about the Back to the Future stuff is they're kind of playing around with the urgency of some scenes of the movie while Dustin is like trying to get everything together here, find a vehicle, all these things. Because he's on the walkie and his batteries are dying, and you can see him, like, he's Marty McFly in the scene where he's got to get back to the future and the DeLorean won't start and the lightning's about to strike and Doc is hanging by his pant leg. Like,
and that music is working. It's in the background. It's all diegetic and it's very cool. He's in the film booth and it's playing and it's right. perfect. The perfect score for that scene.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it's super clever. And also to see, you know, Steve and Robin, who are still under the effects of the Soviet interrogation drug, which seems to be like a cross between LSD and Molly.
Yeah, something.
And they're like, you know, grappling with like, was his mom trying to bone him and trying to, you know, I can only imagine like trying to work out that plot when you're that compromised. Oh, and oh God, throwing up a bucket of popcorn, like within 30 minutes of eating it has to be a special kind of throw up hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not like that.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
I also, Steve and Robin being drugged, deliciously turned to tables on, like, the Steve as the mom, who he's been for the last couple seasons. Like, you know, Steve was the stupid kid, and Dustin was the parent, the exasperated parent, trying to, like, keep him out of danger and keep him from doing stupid stuff. I thought that was goddamn brilliant.
Is the line, "It's official, I'm never having kids," a callback to Steve?
I don't know, but
I'm not sure.
The nature of these pods, we don't have a lot of time to research it between them, but that'd be something to check for the wrap-up podcast, because I bet.
Yeah.
And of course, there's already been like a dozen articles doing deep dives into the pop culture references and all that. So it'll be fun to read these once we're spoiler free.
But the other thing I liked about those scenes is that moment between Steve and Robin, where, you know, Steve kind of says, "Look, I found somebody better than Nancy. It's you." And Robin breaks the news that she's a lesbian. And Steve, I think, like, you know, he takes a moment to process it. It's like a game changer for him.
Yeah.
And I think they handle it really well.
Yeah, I mean,
then they just sort of laugh about Tammy or whatever her name
is. Yeah, you got it. In 1985, in Indiana, there was not a lot of visible gay representation.
No.
I mean,
no, not at all.
Yeah, like I remember becoming aware of a gay guy in my high school after we all graduated and he went to college and went into it's like, oh, right. Yeah. In retrospect, it all made sense. But like having him take a moment of process and be there, like you could tell in Robin's face, there was a little bit of like, I have no idea what's going to happen here. Mm-hmm. And I also, I thought Steve being cool about it seems about right.
Yeah.
You know, like 3 years ago, I think he would have been a massive asshole about it. But he's seen too much. The world's a lot bigger than he imagined it. And also, you know, I think a lot, it's too bad that we all can't have the experience of just becoming friends with people before we know everything about them as far as their race, their creed, their culture, because I think there'd be a lot less hostility if we could just get to know each other as people. But unfortunately, because, you know, a lot of good reasons, a lot of bad reasons, you know, when people are wanting to demand their rights and, you know, like get something from society, society's not given to them, we don't get that opportunity. But that's a great example because, you know, Steve had no problem coming around on that because he already knew Robin. And now he just had to contextualize one small thing rather than, you know, this other stuff coming. But
And it doesn't fundamentally change their relationship other than they're not going to hook up physically.
Yeah,
because they can still be these really good friends who love each other.
Yeah, they've been hanging out all summer long. He's talked about how funny she is and how smart she is. And like, so now you've got the makings for a great friendship.
Yeah.
And he instantly switches to that mode, which I thought was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. There's one other big moment
that
I want to talk about, a romantic moment between Mike and Elle, where Mike tries desperately
the thing that old people
say the L word, and he can't do it.
I guess that's kind of a funny way to put it, but yeah, when you're like that age, like kids don't say that to each other. It is something you see old people say to each other, like your mom and dad maybe if they got a loving relationship, or you see it in the movies, but yeah.
And I just like, I'm wondering if L even would quite understand what he's talking about if he could say the word.
Mm.
Like, what's L's I guess, history with relationships.
She's a little Fifth Element, right?
Yeah, yeah. She's a little, like, she's probably still pretty far, pretty close to the beginning of this learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's better that Mike didn't actually get the word out and sort of confuse the relationship on El's end before what looks to be a massive fight.
Yeah.
Because they both understand, like, there is a connection there, right?
Yeah, and last
episode...
Don't know
that putting the word out there means much.
I thought... Or was it this episode? I thought it was last episode where, you know, Elle was in another room trying to track down Billy, and he loudly proclaimed his love, and then she came out of the door, like, right... I thought it was weird that they played it like she didn't hear him, because the episode before, they just made a big deal out of Max and Elle being able to hear on in from that exact same door. But yeah. I guess you can hand wave it to where, like, Elle was deep in meditation or whatever. So maybe there was something besides acoustics keeping
her
from hearing
maybe
it.
They're setting us up. She did hear it. She knows what word he's trying to use.
She's playing it cool.
Yeah.
The laboratory girl who doesn't know how the world works.
Or sort of just, like, letting Mike hang himself here.
Yeah.
You know, like, letting him twist in the wind a little bit.
Yeah. So there's a couple other things. There's that scene where Elle's blood is kind of bubbling.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Is there...
Man.
I mean, we see in the end of the episode that there is something in her skin, but is that like a... Is that like the Matrix-style tracking device? Is this something that's going to actively try to take over her? Like, Billy
seems
seemed
to be physically,
like,
affecting her.
Billy seemed like he was able to track her with it, so I guess that means that we should expect... things to go down at the mall.
Yeah, I mean,
it's called the Battle Star Court, obviously.
The next episode name gives it all away. But yeah, I expect that, like, honestly, I expected at the end of this episode for the cliffhanger to be the monster busting in through, like, a JCPenney facade or something.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get that.
There's also a sweet moment, like, after Murray blew up Hopper and Joyce's spot and called them on their bullshit, Hopper tried to play it like, oh, you know, don't pay too much attention to Murray. But then when they were on the Graviton trying to interrogate Karen about where the kids are, and the Graviton operator just decided to go full steam ahead and fling them against the wall like a centrifuge, there's that sweet shot of them, like, you know, finding each other's hands and holding it.
Yeah.
So are we going to finally get...
This might be it.
We're finally going to get a hoist... A jopper? Are we going to get this jopper thing off the ground?
Oh, yeah. Wait until the fireball. It's the return to school dance.
Uh-huh.
Joyce and Hopper will be in the parking lot sharing a really awful cigarette.
Yeah.
And this time they'll hook up.
I liked... Joyce kneeing Klein in the groin.
I love it.
I loved it. And it's also because I feel like there's probably not going to be another opportunity to put a point, like a, you know, the put a pin in his character arc. So having Joyce just give him a royal, like, Hopper style beatdown, I quite enjoyed. When the kids were hiding in the mall, did you get any Raptors and Jurassic Park kitchen flavor off of that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Seemed very, very reminiscent of that. And then the last thing is, like, this season, as appropriate for 1985, has been, you know, like, Eric has been, like, very, everybody's been anti-communist, anti-Russian, you know, spouting like you would at the time in the height of the Cold War. But I thought that the conversation between Alexei and Murray about the rigged state of the fair.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was that's like a little bit of sly political commentary from the Duffer brothers, and also appropriate for a counterculture guy like Murray.
Sure.
I don't want anything else to say. I'm really curious. I'm wanting to get on to the finale.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. If you have feedback for us, because we're going to collect it all and talk about it next week on our wrap-up podcast for Stranger Things 3, please send it to strangerthings@baldmove.com, or you can go on our forums where we've created threads for the purpose at forums.baldmove.com to talk it over with your fellow fans, and we might harvest some feedback from there as well. Again, we're going to have one. We're gonna finish the season today. And then next week, probably this time next week, Tuesday of next week, we're going to come back with a wrap-up podcast where we do a little bit more reading, see other people's opinions, process all the feedback, and just kind of talk about how we feel about the season as a whole. I actually have no idea what everyone is saying about the season because I've stayed off.
Me too. I didn't want spoilers.
Maybe we can have some brief discussion of that after the last episode, just to kind of get I kind of like to get my thoughts of the season as a whole out before I start reading everybody else's. But yeah, let's get on to that, and we'll see you then.